Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, here to talk about the England game. I'm Tim, that's Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And that's JB.
Hi, guys. You okay?
I'm not even mad anymore. I'm not even angry.
Yeah. Right, this may be the first episode you're listening to in our feed of the two that we're releasing. If that is the case, we started talking about the other rugby and took so long to get to England, and the other stuff just seemed a little bit, the England story just seems a little bit separate and isolated.
Well, most of our listeners are English.
Well, this is true.
We cover English rugby. We watch the Premiership. This is our expertise now. Mm. This is what we're good at.
This is our home team, if you like, in the sense of what we know and who we know. So yes,
and for you and I, Tim, it is our home team. We genuinely want England to win.
Yeah. I was having this chat the other day, actually. I do regard myself as absolutely as a rugby fan before an England fan, which feels like a lame thing to say when I say it. But it's also the same reason why I don't have a team, a club team, and people.
Well, he went bankrupt.
Well, no, I have had a soft spot for London Irish. Always have, because my brother played for them, but. But I never had a team which I would go and buy a jersey or go to a game and be a supporter and feel anxious when they played, anything like that. A lot of people didn't believe that was the case. They thought I was just saying it because I worked in rugby, but it's true.
It is true. I'll back it up on that. It is 100% true.
But for the same reason, I do. And it sounds so lame when I say it, but I am a rugby fan first. I don't know. Do you recognise what I mean with that, Phil?
I do. Now, I would probably phrase it a bit differently. I will watch any rugby game, pretty much.
That's fair.
Almost any rugby game I will watch, particularly any international rugby game. But I am an England fan. There's almost no other game. Like, I'll watch, I know JB would be particularly invested. If he was watching New Zealand, South Africa, you would always want the box to win.
Always.
Whereas I will watch that game and I don't mind who wins at all.
France, South Africa, because you love France.
I mean, I would support France in that.
Yeah.
Without doubt, I would support France.
Because I would want it to be a good game, close. With the last 10 minutes, I want it to be on a knife edge so either team can win in that scenario. If England are playing, I 100% want England to win.
And most of the time I want England to win because I support the players rather than anything else. Mm. So, like, yeah, I'll give you an example. I've interviewed Courtney Lawes, say. So like, if Courtney Lawes is playing, I desperately want him to win because you kind of know the guy and you root for the guy. So because we do a lot of Premiership rugby, we know a few Premiership players, we've interviewed a few, you want those guys to do well. And also you see them on the TV every week. You know, you're invested in their stories, you're invested in their careers, you want them to go well. But in this case, the overriding narrative for me is, I think England rugby has to burn itself down before it's going to get any better. Because this is bad, boys. It is bad.
And it is bad. And you've gone on at length about the damage from the RFU to the grassroots game, which we don't need to go on about now.
Oh, we do, because it's all...
There's dozens of hours of content on that.
And there'll be a few dozen more to come.
But this is just bad now. This is...
Well, do you know...
Where do you even start?
This, the whole blame for this, right? It's not the players. It's not Steve Borthwick. Now, they do have a bit of blame, right? They do have a bit of blame. They were on the field. They are the coaching team. There's a bit of blame to go in there. But the ultimate blame has to come down to one man. It comes down to one man only. And it's Bill Sweeney. There is nobody else. Now, Bill Sweeney, I mentioned this when Eddie Jones got fired and also when Warren Gatland got appointed.
Is he chief exec or chairman? Or chief exec of the
RFU? Chief exec, yeah.
Now, this guy is paid £600,000 to £700,000 a year.
They got quite a substantial pay rise.
He got a substantial pay rise. This is outrageous, actually, because this man, actually, in the conversation that he had with me, right? In the conversation he had with me, he was bragging that during COVID, not a single grassroots club went bankrupt. This was his brag, and I thought, okay, well, I mean, sounds kind of like the minimum standard to me. Now we fast forward 2 years since we had that conversation. I wonder if he'd still be bragging about grassroots clubs now. Because under his watch, there's three professional clubs that have gone under now. So you can't have it both ways.
Well, I mean, now, are the RFU... yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole. Because the RFU doesn't run Premiership rugby. Yeah. So yes, there's... But
No. But they do regulate it.
Yeah, yeah, understood. Let's not go there.
You've got three strands. You've got professional game, you've got international game, and you've got grassroots game. But the international game... This is the one, right? So I said this, that what Bill Sweeney was involved with when he fired Eddie Jones at the wrong time, because I wanted Eddie Jones to go much sooner before that.
Yeah, you wouldn't have reappointed him after 2019.
Nope.
You would have got rid of him in 2018, in fact.
I would have.
And even after 2019, you wouldn't have.
He would have gone, because that's the sort of time you need for a new coach. What he did, like he has in his entire tenure for the RFU, he has recklessly gambled the future of English rugby, the game which he does not own, but he is the custodian of. So the World Cup was so important to Bill Sweeney because it will justify all of his previous malfeasance within the role. It will justify what he's done to the grassroots game. It will justify what he's done to the pro game. And more importantly, it's going to justify the fact that he spent the best part of £2 million of members' money, of clubs' money, sacking Eddie Jones and then appointing Steve Borthwick. That is absolutely insane.
And Steve Borthwick's team and Eddie Jones' team out and Borthwick's team in.
The amount of money that was spent doing this for the results that they've got, I mean, we can't forget this.
So close to a World Cup.
Had it right. So we never know the counterfactual, because I don't disagree with you, and I'm not trying to disagree with you, I'm just trying to balance it up. Had he not fired Eddie Jones and saved that £2 million... there's every chance we'd be sat here going, I cannot believe he didn't fire Eddie Jones and put Steve Borthwick in when it was talked about and they had that meeting back in December.
But there is a key timing thing here.
Oh, I totally agree.
The timing is the most, you've either got to do it early or not at all. And he dithered. And I'm on record as saying, I probably still wouldn't have fired Eddie Jones.
Because it's weird. JB's been on it since 2018.
Yeah, downfall.
Get rid of Eddie Jones, downfall, etc. I was a staunch Eddie advocate and backer until that South Africa game last autumn, and I regret that change of heart now. Phil, fair play, was like, now's not the right time.
It wasn't the right time. It definitely wasn't. And that has been borne out, because I think we all like Borthwick as a coach. And as a bloke, but it's been proven. Now they might have been even worse under Eddie Jones.
They might have been.
I don't know. Is the answer?
I don't actually think they would have been.
I mean, the point I want to drive home to every single listener that's listening to this now, right, is Bill Sweeney's recklessness with the game, and we have to remember this because his tenure in this role is coming to an end. It just is. He cannot continue to do this. And what I find most egregious about Bill Sweeney is he's used our game to feather his own nest, both with his enormous salary, with absolutely nothing to show for it, with possibly the worst record of any CEO in almost any sport.
I'll give you an example. They've had financial mismanagement that means that the RFU may well have to sell a stake of itself to private equity just to sustain itself.
It has. Well, it's sold at CVC.
But that was the Six Nations, not the RFU.
The actual RFU organisation may have to. But it had massive losses, overspent on the stand, various other things. And how did it save money? With swinging cuts to community coaches, which is a short-term patch-up that has massive
downstream
consequences, which I actually think is part of... Well, we haven't even seen the consequences of that yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think I did a video on the YouTube channel, which I think you'd like, JB, and it actually tracks back to 1995, and the RFU were at fault then because they delayed and dillied and dallied and didn't take control of the game when it turned professional, and as a result, these private individuals came in, and the structure we now have, and everything I think we're now seeing, is downstream of here. And the way I've made sense of it is we have been on a gradual decline with little peaks, little dip, sudden cliff edge drops, and then occasional rises, but the trend has been down from 2003 over 20 years to where we are now. And actually, the way I make sense of that is Eddie Jones massively outperformed the trajectory that England are on.
Mm. He's England's most successful coach in terms of win percentage.
In spite of the inevitable decline for all of the forces and all of the mismanagement, Eddie Jones managed somehow to have an uplift that took us above that line.
Yeah, well, I just want to ram this home to listeners. The gamble, the reason that that Jones was fired and Borthwick was appointed was a gamble. And
total gamble.
Yeah. And the WRU reckless. Did the same thing. Because this for Sweeney is the big stand here, which is he is going to gamble your sports, your club, everything that you love about this game in order to try and save his job. Because if England were to be successful and him to win, he could cover up everything that he's done wrong. Everything he's done wrong. And you know what really annoys me the most? There are... I'm sorry, I am going off on a tangent here. But there are shades of the NatWest boss, Alison Rose, here. So the reason I say that is that Alison Rose's number one job was to be a banker. And at the first opportunity, she broke the first tenet of banking, which is client confidentiality, to push her own agenda. Bill Sweeney will leave this job. And when he leaves this job, he will use our game to feather his nest even further. And he'll point to, well, look what I've done with the women. Look what I've done with this. Look what I've done with diversity. Look what all the things which make absolutely no difference to your club. In fact, he's got to take even more money away from the game in order to fund these pet projects of his. This is what he's up to. Because this is how he sells himself next. Exactly the same as Alison Rose. These people fail upwards continuously. And I was thinking about this. So I thought, let's think of another person in sport who failed miserably. And where do they go? Remember Raylene Castle for Australia?
Rugby Australia.
Absolutely abysmal job with the Australia team. Probably best known for her low-level racism in relation to Israel Folau and excluding one of...
Which other people would assess differently, but fine. That's your take on it. No, I know, I'm just wrong.
And they're probably bigots, too.
Jay, mate, there's no need. There's no need. You can make the same point without deliberately ruffling feathers.
Okay, well, they're not bigots, but they definitely are. And where does she go? She failed upwards to be the head of all of New Zealand sports, which is quite incredible. All right, so Bill Sweeney will fail upwards again. And just remember, it is all on your money, all on your sport. He's just used this sport in order to enrich himself. And you've got to remember that. So now we can get on to Borthwick and the England team.
Well, I'm glad when you talked about it that this is something I've been saying for a little while now. Personnel is irrelevant. And I was talking about personnel being irrelevant in the context of the system that Steve Borthwick was playing. Who cares whether you're playing George Ford, Owen Farrell or Marcus Smith when you're playing that style of rugby? But I think it's maybe even bigger than that. The personnel's irrelevant because the temptation here is to go into a conversation about, oh, you should get this player in. Oh, if you only got this player in. Oh, if Zach Mercer was in and this player was in, it would be totally different. I just cannot buy that. It's like rotten.
Well, it's simultaneously relevant and irrelevant. So, it's irrelevant in terms of the players England have available to them. But it's very relevant in terms of the players England do not have available to them. So, if you want to execute this game, you need unbelievable South African-style ball carriers going up the middle. And they just don't have that. So in that respect, you are right. It's irrelevant which of the non-South African ball carriers that you pick, because you don't have them.
Yeah, it is a pointless conversation to do that. Like, and there is a degree of this where I think even if the England coaching setup that we currently have had access to the pick of the world players, they could pick the best pack in the world, they could pick the best kicking nine in the world, pick Aaron Smith or whoever you otherwise believe is the best kicking nine in the world, pick the best back line to best kick chasing wingers, most aggressive centres. I don't think it actually matters, because this team is so bad and playing so badly. And I was having an interesting conversation with my father-in-law watching this game, and he's saying, well, Borthwick's a good guy, isn't he? He's a good coach. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm sure he is. He's a bit inexperienced in the head coach role, but he's got a fantastic CV. His rugby brain, I think most people would agree, is second to none. As a player, he was a master tactician, and as a coach, he's earned his stripes through multiple different roles. And then my father-in-law said, and the guys around him, they're all like Sinfield, Wigglesworth, they're really good guys, aren't they? And I was like, yes, but those two particularly, so someone like Alad Walters has won a World Cup and everyone raves about him. And ultimately he's a fitness coach, so as long as the conditioning is in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
And I know he does more than just
conditioning. But can I just tell you something about Alad Walters? Just a real interesting snippet. If you were to ask Steve Borthwick who his best coach is in all of Leicester Tigers, in fact, if you, including himself, he would say Alad Walters.
Interesting.
Which is unusual, isn't it, for a fitness guy?
Yeah, and maybe that says something to the point that I'm about to make.
Oh, dear.
Which is when he said, Sinfield and Wigglesworth, like, they're brilliant, they're like leaders and heroes, and all that. I was like, yes, but they're so inexperienced. They're so inexperienced at a club game. Like, they now have a good CV because they've, in a few years, got Leicester to win the league. But that is the extent of their CV.
It is.
That is literally the entire extent of their CV. And so there's that part to it. And combine that with the fact that Sinfield is a legend, for the work he does outside of the sport. He's a legend in rugby league anyway, because he's one of the all-time greats. And for the work he does outside, he's an absolute legend. And Wiggy, similarly, he's a very likeable bloke. He was a very, very talented player and has won everything in the game.
Six titles?
Yeah, Premiership titles, plus Champions Cup titles, plus however many England caps. Maybe not as many as he should have done, but still got them over an enormous length of time, probably like 15 years from his first to his last England caps. And maybe that's something that you've got these guys who are held in such high esteem and such high regard for stuff that is unrelated to their coaching ability, and perhaps their coaching ability is just sadly lacking, that if they said, oh, your defensive structure is, everyone's got to look back at their try line, and everyone would nod and say, yeah, we'll do it for you, Sir Kev. And they're just leading because of who they are as individuals. They're leading the players down the garden
path.
There's
no questioning, is there? Like, I've never, ever heard a member of the press, until maybe today, with Charlie Morgan, questioning Kevin Sinfield. And I think that is a little bit worrying, because he's unquestionable. Because of all the good work he's done.
Gradually, over the last few weeks, people have been just talking about the lack of tries and the number of tries conceded.
Yeah.
Lack of tries being a Wiggy thing, number of tries being conceded a Sir Kev thing.
Well, I'd like to point out something else, really. And it, again, links to something which I said in previous weeks. But when Steve Borthwick took his first head coaching role at Leicester Tigers, one of my biggest criticisms of him, and I hated what he did, I mean, still to this day, I think it's a stain against him.
Is this relevant to England?
No, I'm just saying it randomly. Of course it's relevant to England.
Oh, okay.
What
sorry.
Do you think I'm doing?
Sorry.
I'm doing a podcast about England.
Okay.
Right? So, I still think it's bad to this day. is he cost a lot of players a lot of jobs and a lot of reputations by just seeing who works, seeing who doesn't. Players who, in a different system with a bit more nurturing, could have probably made it. But the upshot of that is he found great talents like Freddie Stewart and yada yada yada, and we know the rest of the, that. It feels to me that when he was appointed the England coach, he didn't have that same confidence. Like, he didn't go through a load of players. We spoke podcast, was it? About how many players Eddie Jones used in his England camp.
Well, Eddie got lambasted for that by you as much as anyone.
Well, I would say... Well, hang on. The ones which I didn't like were the politically driven ones, and we can all agree now they were politically driven.
Well, we can't agree.
I wouldn't... I'm not Cam so Red, sure.
No, Sam Moore...
Sam Moore is an oddity. It doesn't necessarily mean...
You can't impugn motive. You can't guess what the motive was.
I'm not guessing. We all know what the motive was. They didn't want English qualified players playing for Scotland and Wales. That's what it was.
I'm still not...
Gary Graham was told by Eddie Jones, you're not my selection. What do you reckon the motive was, boys? What was the motive?
So Eddie Jones says a lot of things. Eddie Jones says, have a beer, mate. When he doesn't mean have a beer, mate.
Okay, so Eddie Jones selected him, but then told him that he wasn't his selection. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point I was making is that maybe England need a bit more of the New Zealand one or two cap players, where you just get lads in for one or two caps, just see if they can do it. In my mind, this England team is very stagnant, very lazy. I've said all of that previously. But I just want to know, like, where was that Steve Borthwick that came into Leicester, who went through every player possible to find out who works?
He had the time. We're going back to the previous point. There was the year with no relegation. Yes.
But this is the thing, right, Tim? He's been appointed, and everybody understands, with this limited amount of time to the World Cup, right, he has a completely free shot. It almost exactly the same.
Yeah, but he also doesn't have the luxury of being able to pick or go through all those players, because he had, like, 9 games in total.
Well,
when he took over from when he's...
You would say he's in a very similar situation to his predecessor, Eddie Jones, who's done exactly that with Australia. He's gone to Australia and he's left, like, big names out, and he's reinvented it because he knows he's got a free hit. Like, I think if he was a bit more savvy, he would look back at what he's done and go, actually, let's just start again. Let's see who we can find. Let's rebuild it from scratch. Because you even said yourself in the last podcast, you feel better about Australia because that's a younger, improving team.
Oh, no, I actually agree. But this, again, comes back to the point of personnel. It's the system that he plays. I don't think it matters which English players he picks in the system that he operates, for the reason that you just said. Because, you know, and I think actually the bigger picture here of this is partly Steve Borthwick, this is partly England rugby in general, is the Premiership is a shadow of what it was 5 years
100%.
Ago. 100%. And... therefore, what looks like and what worked with Leicester Tigers will not work on the international stage, and what is controllable and achievable with these players in a Premiership context, you cannot deliver. And England do not have the players to. They don't have a load of meatheads props that are going to mully you in the scrums.
No, they do not.
Yeah, who will be the next cab off the rank in props?
So I don't.
Joe Hayes and you're going like, Patrick Schickling.
Trevor Davison.
Will Collier.
You're not going like
try them.
Trevor Davison
most of those guys have been tried.
Yeah. A lot of these guys have been.
Valerie Ruskin.
Yeah, well, loose head's less of a problem. Yeah. Tighthead is a bigger problem.
I think loose head's a big problem though, because you know, watching this game of the weekend, I just think. Everybody. I mean,
the whole team is a problem.
Did you see that Genge tweet? By the way,
yeah, I thought that was tone deaf.
I mean,
I've not seen it.
The guy, as I keep on saying, he's a good Premiership player. He's a good carrier for a prop, but an average carrier for an international, or maybe a good to average carrier. But it allows him to be an underpowered, undersized prop.
Well, I think he's been. Eddie Jones used him like in a Scout Brits way as a kick returner at one point.
Against France.
It was
unusual. It was quite good fun, that. Just one point on the changes. Borthwick's actually spoken about this. He can't, because he can only change 5 players in the elite squad at a time.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
That is a good point.
He actually can't. And one of the... it's kind of a frustration. Is he's done like a microcosm of it in certain positions. like the centres, we've hardly seen the same centre pairing twice. Mm. Like the centre pairings have just been rotated.
And it's the same personnel though, isn't it?
But it's the same personnel, yeah, just in different positions with different people alongside them. And that's one of the, I think, centre partnerships, because they're so integral to your defensive structure and getting your attack going, which are the two big things that England have been unable to do, see earlier points. You need some consistency there. So even if you change loads of other things, getting that solid would actually be a benefit.
I also don't think England take the international game as seriously as they should do. And I think this runs across the RFU. I'll give you two examples. There's the women's game in Newcastle, or Huddersfield, in the North East, to say goodbye to Sarah Hunter. Sarah Hunter was a magnificent player for England, but nobody deserves...
In the middle of... And it was like halfway through the Six Nations. Yeah, nobody.
You should never, ever... You know, the team and the game is bigger than any player. You know, they 100%. Did. Wales did it for Alwyn Jones, a send off for him. No, the answer is no.
Yeah,
like you're good enough or you're not good enough, and that's why it's special.
Even Italy did not do it for Parise.
Yeah, that's what happens. Yeah, it's brutal.
It is Parise, one of the most capped players of all time, one of the best, and certainly probably the best Italian player of all time.
Yeah,
didn't get a send off. Yeah, so,
and England men's did it against Wales in the Millennium. Allegedly, as a thank you for those who showed up. It's not a thank you squad, right? Judging by how you've gone, you needed every single second with these players to get better, and you gave away a valuable international cap as a thank you. Are you mad? Like, there is something about England rugby which just doesn't. It simultaneously takes the game very seriously, which is why you've got this crazy difference between players in Premiership squads who are internationals with double the pay of Tom Curry and Ben Curry, right? Almost identical players. They are identical players, right? One is worth probably double the pay of
I would dare to say that one has earned probably four or five times more than the other. And now that injuries play a large part in that.
Yeah. You've got the situation where once you're in the England squad, it's very hard to get out of the England squad. It's very hard to get in. And
once you're in the elite squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Partly for the reason... Well, yeah. No, a big part of it, the reason Phil mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, they're just not taking it seriously enough. You don't waste international caps. And you don't give them away as thank yous. That, to me, it's disrespectful to the game. It's disrespectful to the cap. England, and it's an RFU problem.
No, I get that. England had four warm-up games where most countries... Ireland had two.
Yeah, but tell you what, it looks like they needed them.
Well, yes, it does. But for the first one, I'm going to play my backup players, I don't see that as a major issue. I don't see that as I'm giving you a thank you.
No, that was literally what it's for.
No, now it seems like you could have done with the time together, but
and then
no one was saying this. No one was really saying this when the team was announced.
But after the game, when we recorded on the Sunday, the day after, we all said, it looked like a
they weren't
a send off.
So basically, you look at
the decision was already made.
Yeah. Ireland only announced their squad yesterday, right? Like, this is another Steve Borthwick error to me, which is why announce it? I mean, this again it just shows how comfortable that they are. They've been so bad, but they're safe.
Yeah, they're safe.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that, and that came from the players apparently.
Who cares?
Yeah. Don't listen. Yeah. No. Here, I've said this before. I agree.
Blow my lid.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Hey boss, can you announce the team early so I'm more secure? Get out. No, and don't leave. No, not here. Leave completely. Completely. From the players, it's not their team.
So, one of the points you kind of hinted at before, which is Charlie Morgan wrote a great article yesterday on. He's written two good articles last couple of days.
Yes, you tease us in my kitchen.
So, the first one was basically. Saying the defence is not good enough, and here are some of the observations. And Sir Kev's systems are not working. And some of his observations were very similar to ones that I'd made. And the thing I would point out would be two of the tries plus the disallowed tries were all total failures, like fundamental failures to get guards into position. At Rooks.
Yeah.
Ben Earl for the pick and go from the number 14.
Was one Dan Cole?
So that was Ben Earl. One was Johnny May on the right wing, where Johnny May, Courtney Laws hits the Rook, and Johnny May is what should be the guard. And Johnny May just jogs out to his wing. Really? And the ball is offloaded and there's this, there's like a 5 metre hole 2 yards from his own try line because he just jogged out to his wing instead of being, he was the first man on the blind side, he should have been the guard.
Did you see the one where the disallowed try?
The disallowed try was Genge hits the ruck, leaving an enormous guy. Ruck that's already won.
So it's Chesham.
It's Chesham.
On the inside
and
of
then
Chesham.
It's Manu.
So it was Cole.
No, so it was. But sorry, really outside matter, outside
to the point.
Outside Chesham was Manu. It was Chesham.
Yes.
Yeah. And then inside was Genge. He hits the ruck and creates the gap. But he hits the ruck, which should have meant that Chesham and Manu step in, and they Genge, the ruck was already lost, so Genge shouldn't have hit.
But then you Chesham also have Cole chasing on the back of the ruck, and he's
already, yeah, but he'd come from the other side, but he was never getting there.
No, well, he wasn't running for a start, yeah. And he never intended to run, even when the break was made.
But those three, and that's two of the tries and one of the disallowed tries, which I thought was a little, hands did go forward, a little bit harsh. But they are just like, they're schoolboy errors in failing to identify the risk around the ruck and failing to just say, your first man, regardless of whether you're Johnny May or Alex Mitchell or Ellis Genge, you have to be that guard and you have to set the...
You know, well, as you say, because you say it's schoolboy errors, then this is where I would have a bit of sympathy for Kevin Sinfield, because there was also just 27 missed tackles by England in that game. That's not a defensive system failure.
No, well, 27's not that. I don't know the total number, but let's say it's 150.
Yeah,
you're talking
nearly 30%.
No.
25% nearly. 30.
Yeah, 20%. Yeah, 30 would be 20%.
20%.
So
yeah,
you're talking 80. Let's call it 82%. Which against Fiji is probably not a bad. It should be better than that.
There were some
poor ones.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right. You have to split it into coachable. Like Kevin Sinfield should not. I mean, he's had to with Owen Farrell in his team, but he should not be working on basic like one-on-one tackle technique.
And he should be working on
systems.
And the Broughton Park under 16s know that when there's a breakdown, you get a guard either side.
Yeah.
These are international rugby players. That's not Kevin Sinfield's job.
That's exactly what I was about to say to him. It baffles me as a coach and as a player that I'd run away from a ruck.
Well, and this is why, because it's happening, it is as if it's a system thing. Right. It's happening repeatedly. It's not a priority in that system, but it should be a priority in almost every system. Like that should be the first thing.
There was a press conference with Steve Diamond after a Sale game, and there was a loss the week before, and then they won the week after. Of course, the loss was not Diamond's fault, but the win was completely Diamond's responsibility. And in the press conference, he's like, yeah, well, we came away from that, and we came away from last week, and we had to have some real strong words, because some lads did not know what they were doing at the ruck, and we had to go back to basics and do guards and bodyguards again. It's like, what? At Sale Sharks? Like that? But that's what they did.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes the fundamentals just break down because they're so bogged down by everything else.
But I see it, because it is happening so frequently, it's almost like this... The system is not prioritising the number one thing that it should be prioritising in those situations. So there is a flaw in the system. That's my read on it. And it might be... You're exactly right. There is a plausible explanation that it's the players entirely just not understanding the system or not implementing the correct system. It could be that, or it could be a system error. You're right, we don't know. But that my read, as I think Charlie Morgan's was that it is more that system error.
Can I tell you the more disturbing part about England's tries that they conceded? They weren't good tries.
They were.
This is the thing with people, the flying Fijians, all the skill. One of the tries I'm seeing, it was absolutely horrendous.
Where Johnny May gets stood up.
Yeah.
And
Brad Randa throws a pass at someone's feet.
Bounce pass.
A bounce pass.
Yeah. It's
classic
basketball skill set.
The winger... the 14.
Yeah, who messed up for the Johnny May try. It was an almost carbon copy of... They both did it to each other.
And just... I think, like, this is international rugby. Like, you can't let a player at a standstill, when you've got supporting tacklers with you as well, go around you. You just can't do that. Yeah. The last try, where that's just simple offload. It blows my mind.
That we watched that again. Johnny May, so Courtney Laws kind of hits, because there's a half tackle and then the offload. When Johnny May sees that there's been this half tackle, he just jogs out to the wing instead and leaves a 5 metre gap 2 yards from his own line.
Mad.
He should have been the next man there in that guard position.
Yeah, I just think a mixture of apathy from the players, or not apathy. I can't even describe these players, because I know they're good, and I've seen them in the Premiership. I know they're good players.
But is there any merit in what I'm saying? The Premiership's just not that good.
Yeah, there
is huge merit. There is huge merit in that.
And
I actually think these players in the top 14 would be fine, but it's that weekly high intensity, high quality competition.
Steel sharpening steel.
Correct. Correct.
And also, there's players in that team who are. They've not been informed for some time, some of those players, through injuries, through age, through playing in not great teams. It's like someone like Courtney Laws, who we all love. He's a brilliant, brilliant player. We've hardly seen him for the last two years since the Lions. Even before the Lions, he was struggling to be fit. He doesn't look like old Courtney to me.
Does any play? Well,
Manu is another great example.
Manu's not anywhere near this team.
No. Maro Itoji.
Itoji is a good shout.
Completely vanished.
Itoji gets away with a lot because he's got such amazing game tape of him just doing things that almost no other player in the world would do. When was the last time you saw Maro do something that
looks pedestrian?
Yeah, totally.
Uninterested.
But it's then, and I don't necessarily want to have this conversation in huge depth, but. The point that you made before, Tim, which was right, which was there is no one else to get in. They just don't have them available. If you were going to get rid of Maro, who do you bring in?
Well,
Johnny Hill, David Ribbons. But they're not playing. Neither of those are playing well.
So this is where I'm thinking.
Alex Coles.
Yeah, is it a case of the lost the dressing room type thing that these players don't believe in it? And you understand, at that level, a few percent off. It gets magnified. It's your analogy with the setting out from port at a 1 degree gap. At the elite level, that it makes a big difference. And I just think it might be that they didn't believe in what Eddie was doing, and they don't believe in what Steve Borthwick is doing.
Well, do you know I don't know if there's a tale, but the theory about peacetime generals,
peacetime number eights.
Yeah. Well, so you go to war with your generals, with your general staff and whatnot. And within 3 weeks, you've fired them all. And then you fired the next lot. And then you fired the next lot. So, take World War II. Say any conflict, they pretty much chew through generals at a massive pace until they finally find one that sticks.
And most of those in World War II were the World War I guys. Yeah. The guys who are now 65 years old.
You finally find a general who is not a peacetime general. And I think it's the same with players. So, I'll give you a great... Centres is a classic one. Everyone says, who would you get in? Well, I don't know is the answer, but I do know you missed out on Tompkins and Williams and Harris. Who would you get in at hooker?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Don't know, but I do know that you just lost to Matavesi, and he He served in the bloody Navy. Like, he is as eligible to play as anybody.
Well, he's born in England.
Yeah, he's English.
He's born in Cornwall, wasn't he?
So, like...
He's born in Truro.
There's a guy there. See the guy who's beating you? Yeah. That guy could have played for you, but you didn't want him, did you? You never gave him a shot. So the answer is, I don't know now, but that's why I said before, like, maybe more one or two cut players. I think that would be really, really valuable.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I also say, what's the point in playing someone and trying to judge them in that system?
And with the time, because you could have done that. So Borthwick, had he have had 4 years fresh, and he might not get 4 years because this will go so badly, I can definitely see that.
I think he has to.
He has to, I agree.
Because they've spent so much and all the rest of it.
Maybe a refresher.
But if there's one thing we know, the RFU do bow to whatever people say online and stuff. So cause enough of a fuss and it'll be gone.
But if Borthwick had 4 years and there was some relaxation on the number of players who can come in and out of the elite player squad, I have no doubt that we would see... I've actually got in front of me the players out of Leicester Tigers in the 2020-2021 season.
Out
of Leicester. It's about 45 players long.
Yeah, so...
Henry? It's unbelievable. You know, he might have been in a different year.
I'm not going to read it.
The other fly half they had.
Jordan Taufua.
It's a million people.
Manu Tuilagi.
Yeah.
Kyle Eastmond.
Yeah.
Greg Bateman.
I bet if you compiled those first 2 or 3 years of Borthwick, the players that Borthwick got rid of, I bet you're touching like 80 odd players.
Tom Hardwick.
In that period, yeah. There's so many of them.
There's loads.
So,
anyway.
But the, I don't think he'll get the chance.
No.
Which won't. I think will be
but
sad.
I kind of think
Just on another player, and I'm not saying he should, I'm not going, oh, you should drop him, he's not good enough, because I honestly don't know who else you pick, but like, Freddie Stewart, what has happened to that
man?
Do you know?
This is an interesting one because Freddie Stewart is a raging dumpster fire at the moment. And we all know he's a good player. We all know he's world class at certain aspects of the game on occasion, right? But the only bright spot of this England game was Marcus Smith at 15, and I am in no way in favour of playing players out of position, particularly when you've got the strength and depth that England have. You should never need to do it. But it did seem to work, strangely. It did. Marcus Smith did seem to give him...
New Zealand do it.
An attack. Yeah, they do, don't they? And he just seems to give him an attacking spark, and I thought, that's interesting. He'll never... Well, will it? Because he did it for Fiji, and it's about the only thing that did work.
Well, what one thing I am convinced of in England's tactics is that they are going to try and play 60 minutes of... the most boring rugby you've ever seen, and they've been
perfect.
They've been so ineffective at doing it so far, but maybe it'll come good. Maybe they will actually be able to catch the
maybe
ball.
Maybe Steve Borthwick is keeping his cards really so close to his chest.
Do you think there's a chance of Steve Borthwick I do think this is almost certainly the case, actually, just being a good soldier, like saying, I'm going to try my best to go as far as I can with this group of players in this World Cup, because that is the right thing to do. Where actually, what I would do, because I'm more Machiavellian, and say, well, I've been appointed by the RFU, I have all the power, I've only got 8 games, I'm going to feather my nest for the next World Cup. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make sure that I've got... I'm going to take all the risks now. I'm going to find out who my team is. If this World Cup doesn't work out, I don't care.
Steve Borthwick doesn't do risk regardless. He didn't at Leicester.
But he did do that, didn't he?
He churned through players. He had that year, but in terms of what was on the field...
I don't mean he's not going to risk anything.
No.
But he had to find those players for his scheme.
I think you're right, he was hamstrung by the EPS squad.
Yeah, 5 players isn't going to be enough,
allowed to change 5 players.
Is that even for a World Cup? Are you allowed to...
Elite
squad to elite squad. So there might be some caveats around the World Cup.
I'll tell you a guy who I wouldn't mind seeing back if I was an England fan is Launchbury.
Yeah. Although we've not seen him for several years.
He's in good shape, and he's working hard at Harlequins.
Yeah.
In very good shape, actually.
He's not a bad shout. And so, someone like Chesham. Did you watch the 0-2 inside line this week with the Chesham comeback?
Yeah, I love that.
I love seeing the hard work and the effort, and it's great to see him back. Is he... I guess it's I've got this question with a load of players that are they the player they were several years ago? Is Chesham the same player that he was 6 months ago, given based on the fact that 6 weeks ago he was only just starting running on grass and he's still getting pinching pains in his ankle? Maybe they've pushed him too much to get him back because he's a Borthwick man, knows Borthwick systems. Maybe they would have been better to say, Big Joe Launchbury, you're back in England, you're 125 kg and 6'8". Can you come and
help
Will Stewart or Kyle Sinclair push a little bit?
They need it. They absolutely need it.
They do.
Let's talk about that again's tweet.
I've not seen this. I'm
in shock about this.
I am not looking at...
What exactly did he say again?
Write us off now if you want. You've lost to Fiji, mate.
Lost to Fiji, which is not only the first time that England have lost to Fiji, it's the first time that England have lost to any Tier 2 nation.
And hold on. The context here as well, this is what I would say, is that there's a lot of people who spend a lot of money to come and watch England, and it's not just the results. There's very little in the way of entertainment, so I guess that magnifies the necessity for the results to deliver. And they've shut the top tier of Twickenham.
50,000 people on a bank holiday weekend in admittedly bad conditions, but no one knew that when... It should be a sellout. Twickenham should never not be a sellout.
Well, it was a sellout the night before.
It certainly was a sellout the night before. Now, that...
He tweeted... and this was on the 27th, this was Sunday, at 1:08 a.m. So Saturday night after the game, 1:08 a.m.
You're playing Fortnite or League of Legends or something.
Write us off now, all the best.
Yeah, well, come on, mate, come on. What does he mean by that? He's going to win the World Cup? Because if
they win the World Cup, they've proved us all wrong.
They're not winning the World Cup.
He then followed it up with big congratulations to Fiji Rugby on a historic win. It's an historic win, but anyway, I'm joking. Then he said to all the England rugby fans, with little quotation marks, supporting us, we know we're not where we need to be at all right now. We will get there. Stick with us through the dark. Thanks for the love.
I absolutely loathe this for all the England fans. In quotation marks.
Oh, a little star either side. So. Not quotation marks.
Okay, fine.
Like asterisks.
So it's like supporting. It's basically air quotes.
Yeah. Right. I hate that. It's like, why are you not supporting? Like as if the fans are the problem. As if the fans are the problem because they're not supporting hard enough. Yeah, they are. But you're just not delivering. And you've not delivered for a long time. And, Ellis Genge has got his reputation of being like a leader and a bit of a character. And the more I listen to him, the less impressed that I am. And the more I've watched him over the summer series, the less respect that I have for him. His attitude absolutely sucks.
Well, hold on. Let's hear from the man himself. Because some of the replies. Someone said, Ellis, don't confuse frustration with a lack of support. You've been a rugby fan before you were a pro. Would you be saying, there, never mind, if you were where we are now? Of course we support our national team, but not unconditionally. And Ellis Genge's reply to this guy called Gareth, I've no issues with fans being upset. I think my message is being misinterpreted as a dig. It's a genuine thank you, and I thought I'd reach out to try and show the human side of the team, not just the rugby. And then when someone said, hold on, but you've put the stars around supporting, that was uncalled for. Don't mistake dismay, anger or criticism for a withdrawal of support. These are expressions of supporters' pain and passion. And Ellis Genge said, the star marks, as in look like the asterisk things, aren't me using quotation marks as if I'm being disingenuous when I say it. They're to highlight the importance of the support.
Right.
Being misinterpreted, it would seem. So if we just take Ellis Genge at what he says,
he was
highlighting the word supporting. Like, thanks for supporting. I mean, I don't know if I buy that.
I'm not sure I buy
that.
But
I'll take him at his word. I'll take him at his word.
Yeah, he's always got a gripe, hasn't he? He's always got a whinge about something. Always. So, yeah, he just continuously whinges. I think I started having a bit more of a low opinion of him when he dressed up in Bristol stash when he was Leicester Tigers captain. I think that was a particular low point for me.
To be fair, it wasn't Bristol stash.
It was
unbranded Umbro. It was just like blue. But he was still hugging and high-fiving the head coach of Bristol when he was Leicester Tigers captain. So the stash is...
I don't know how I feel about that, because when you say it like that, I actually quite like it.
Park the stash, but then how do you feel about Pat Lamb? Hugging and high-fiving Pat Lamb?
You know my feelings on Pat Lamb.
Right. We do.
Just one other thing that came out in an interview. So it was only a couple of weeks ago, and I remember hearing like, "Oh, the training is world class. We're just looking amazing."
Oh, it's George Ford.
And now George Ford has said we're not training anywhere near where we need to.
Too many mistakes. I did see the headline: "Too many mistakes in training." And I was like, "Well, no, it's too many mistakes in the game that are causing you an issue. Ignore the training."
Oh, George.
But if you can't get right in training, that is a bad sign.
Do you know, maybe more one of the more promising things which have been said. I mean, I guess if you've got a problem, the start inquisition would be to identify that problem and be honest about it.
So I think this goes back to what you were talking about with Australia. I think there's a massive element here where actually the results matter, but it's the fact we're being bored to tears and losing.
Yeah. I'm not bored. I've not noticed any boredom.
The boredom, like, because I have no problem playing a pragmatic game.
Yeah.
But the problem is they're not even getting to play a pragmatic game because they're not even getting three phases together because they're knocking the ball on or not supporting their men in contact and getting turned over.
We don't like the England defence, and I think we can all be unanimous in our agreement on that. But the England attack, oh my God. I mean, just watching them drift sideways. Who taught them this? Do they... I know they're good players. I know they're good players. So they must know not to do this. Is somebody telling them to do this? Or are they like Anchorman that just does anything which is on the, like, their teleprompter?
Well, if the hero of Sir Kev or the man with such ruby intellect and intelligence of Wiggy tells them to do it, they wouldn't dare question it. They'll just do it.
Yeah, we're going around sideways today and leave the rook alone. I mean, that's more... That's,
yeah, yeah. Give at least a 10-metre gap around the rook.
Maybe. Maybe they're taking this... Yeah, maybe they are taking this literally, because I always shout, leave the rook alone, which means I don't contest it.
Yeah.
But my players have all got, like, masters and PhDs. So when I say leave the rook alone, they do understand.
They get straight into the guard position.
Yeah, but when Sakev's saying, leave the rook alone, they're just going in all sorts of different directions. run the ball wide. No. Pass the ball to runners that are wide.
Okay, if we just talk about a couple of other performances, I thought two guys who I really, really like, really rate, were totally anonymous in Ben Earl and Jack Willis. They did...
Now, this is a strange one, isn't it?
They did nothing.
Because they both play in positions where, even in Steve Borthwick's system... they can influence the game.
They should be some of the most noticeable players on the pitch.
Tommy Rafael.
Just in defence, yeah. Just
Tommy Rafael, Hanro Liebenberg.
Yeah, perfect examples.
Yeah. Just work rate.
And why are they not performing? I didn't see
either of them. Like, they were totally anonymous.
Like, and there's no questioning that those are two of England's best players.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about the Premiership not being up to scratch. Well, maybe Saracens are. But Willis plays for bloody Toulouse.
Just won the top 14 title.
Yeah, so what's his problem?
He's got no excuses of steel sharpening steel. Like, he's been playing with and against the best players in the world all last season.
Crazy, isn't it? I can't really fathom that.
And the Fijian guy that Jack Willis was up against was a sevens player that's just started playing for the 15s team.
Yeah, really? Even better.
What was his name? Now, Derling, anyway.
Can we just talk about...
He did also have Valami Mata and Albert Tuisui.
Correct.
Who were fairly handy in the back row.
Right, talking about Albert Tuisui. If I swapped Semi Radranda and Albert Tuisui positions, I don't think you'd notice a difference. Like, legitimately, I do not think you'd notice a difference. Semi Radranda has got this amazing bank account, an incredible reputation... And I see flashes of his genius, but only the same way I've seen flashes of Albert Tuisui's genius, which is Albert Tuisui is a big man that can run over people and offload. That is all that Semi can do.
In this game, his best bits were he bundled over George Ford once and he did someone else. But other than that...
He's just a back row who plays in the centres, and we think he's some amazing skill.
Well, he doesn't even have the Bottier skill set, which is someone who can legitimately play both.
Yeah.
Because Bottier has played at top level, top 14 in Champions Cup.
He dropped the ball in contact four times. He dropped the high ball. He threw a...
Now, the high ball was a...
It's a spiral bomb.
It's a spiral bomb.
Oh, it's impossible to catch
him,
sorry.
Great, though.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks amazing.
He threw an absolute custard pie into touch. And
he got the assist for the assist, though, with a bounce pass.
Yes, he did get the assist.
He got the assist for that. And I'd also add, he doesn't just look great. He looks even better when the rain has soaked his Fijian shirt.
I mean, there's no questioning he is a phenomenal specimen. I mean, I'd love to look like the guy. But I'm glad I don't play like him.
If he was English, Welsh, Scottish, he would walk into the team.
Why? He's nothing but a reputation.
He's better than anything England have got.
Including Owen Farrell? Oh my word, Tim, you're alright.
He was playing 12.
Semi-Randranda was playing 12. Owen Farrell would be playing 10, there is 10 no inside way. Him.
I mean, I might play.
That's a Biff partnership.
Yeah.
Who's the 13 then, if there was a... If we're thinking of the...
Nyakalevu.
Yeah,
have him as well.
Or put Andre Esterhazen to 13.
Oh, yeah.
Now, let's just talk about Fiji a second. They were mighty impressive in some instances.
Yeah, let's just wrap up England for a second. So, we sort of talked around things. So, and it's worth pointing out that, again, partly because of the draw, England could win a World Cup by playing well twice.
Yes.
They only have to play well twice to win a World Cup.
But they could also lose to Samoa and Japan.
They could lose to Samoa and or Japan. And
they probably will lose to Argentina.
Probably will lose to Argentina, I agree with that.
They might only beat Chile in this World Cup.
It could happen, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it will, because Japan are not
I
great.
Expect England, you know, Owen Farrell will be back by then, so they'll be fine against Samoa.
Exactly.
I expect them to get out of the pool, and then they're going to be probably playing Australia, and I'd back them on a one-off game to maybe beat Australia.
That very young squad.
Very,
yeah.
Very young squad. And you're in a semi-final, by which time, if England play well, and they're up against New Zealand or Ireland, then I don't expect them to win, but they could. And then this is what I'm saying, when I was looking at the trajectory of England rugby, and actually I think Eddie Jones overperformed, and getting to a World Cup final was above par, although maybe actually the secret of that success 4 years ago was actually the Premiership was much better and Saracens was the ingredient that made England got to a World Cup
final.
Is
Nick Evans still in the team?
No.
I don't think he is, is he?
No.
So what do you make of, and it's not a story, but speculation, I guess, or maybe the hope that the England players revolt and play a different way?
Well, yeah, it's I think it's hope more than speculation.
It is hope, isn't it? I've seen no evidence.
No, we've got lots of people talking about it in the press and stuff, and we talked about it on the podcast last week because of what happened in 2007, the World Cup in France, where they
would
got
you guys
panned
be
by South Africa.
Would you really?
Yeah, I would. I don't see there's a lot to lose.
Yeah, other than... if that happens, Borthwick will not be there for the next 4 years.
No, that's true. He won't be there for the next 4 years. The one thing I will say about that is that from the reasons that Phil talked about attack and defence, it doesn't look like the players are taking a lot of responsibility at times where they should be, and at least it would mean that they're taking ownership. Because, like you say, Ellis Genge's tweet sounded tone deaf when we first read it, because it was like, that sounds like you're pushing back at fans who have...
Because
who are very just disappointed.
And if they did decide to play their way, how would they play?
It depends who's doing it.
Well, you've got to assume it's Owen Farrell.
If Farrell's doing it,
got to assume it's Owen Farrell.
It's not going
to
be that much different, is it? If Marcus Smith is doing it, it's quite different.
Owen Farrell plays in a Saracens team that play a lot differently to how Saracens originally played.
Do. Yeah, true.
You know, and if he goes to his old mates, George Ford, look, you play 10, I'll play 12. Just like, you know, I did it in Lions with Johnny Sexton. What does that look like if they decide to...
Better than what they're doing now.
Couldn't look any worse.
No, couldn't, could it?
If Owen Farrell was deciding how to play, they wouldn't be playing like this.
Yeah, you're right. It wouldn't be... Saracens used that tool to get them up the ladder, but once they were up the ladder, they branched out to different things.
And by the way, just on Owen Farrell, because I am an Owen Farrell fanboy. I love him.
No.
What, you?
He will be regarded as a legend. And the second he retires, people will love him. They will absolutely love him.
What was the term for this? Farrellista?
Farrellista.
Absolutely Farrellista.
Farrellista.
He's one of the England all-time greats, and
I couldn't disagree more.
And he's absolutely one of the England all-time greats, and I would have said this before Borthwick got picked, but I'm absolutely saying it now. He would do better than Borthwick is currently doing.
So difficult, because I still have a load of respect for Borthwick.
Same.
So do I.
So difficult. And the one thing I don't want to see him fail, because I kind of think...
Of course, nor do I, obviously.
No. What I mean by that, like, I don't want to see him be the scapegoat for this.
Yes, because that's what I mean. I agree with you there. There's much bigger things at play, which hopefully I've got across as well. I'm not having a pop at Borthwick.
But on the other hand, I still have to hold him accountable for not changing the squad enough, releasing the squad too early, you know, just all
playing
of
these, this playing this game plan when you don't have the personnel
playing
to execute.
The game. Yeah, playing the game plan, which
that's the one. Yeah. That I'm focused but, on right
there
now.
There again, if that's what you do. And that's what, like, that's what you're employed to do. You know, I mean, it's not a secret what he was going to do.
No, it's because, not.
So, when the RFU went to him, who was making the ropey decision?
Yeah. Even we were sat here going, saying what he's going to do, and we thought he did have the personnel to
do it. Do you know what I would have said when he's appointed? I'm just trying to think. What would I have said when he's appointed? I would have said, his style of rugby, Leicester Tigers' style of rugby, is much more international-based than any other. They rely on territory, and they rely on set-piece. When I say it like that, it should still technically be not only just feasible, but preferable to play that way for an international team. So actually, why it's not working, I don't know. Because I still stand by that, actually. That's how I would play international rugby. Territory-based, set up some set pieces. He is the best in the business when it comes to line-outs. Why are we not seeing that?
Yeah, and I think some of that is just the fact that the players, there are so many times where they've just not got past 2-3 phases because they've either just dropped the ball from a straight pass one out, or the mate has got disconnected and not supported at the ruck. They've been jackaled, turnover. There's so many there are so many basic errors that mean we've hardly seen what Borthwick is trying to do, and that's one of my few things where I'm like, if they just get those errors out of their system and we actually see the game plan, maybe it will come good. Maybe.
So one of my biggest criticisms of Leicester Tigers was the fact that when they had the ball in the red zone, they didn't finish enough. So they infrequently had the ball in scoring positions, and they'd get over usually using their line-out. Their line-out was the best weapon in the Premiership that year as a launch platform to score points. But quite often they'd get the ball in play, and they weren't clinical enough. I wonder if this deficiency in the way that Leicester play has just been shown up even more because these are international defences.
Maybe. There are some stark and very relevant comparisons here. Baseball and cricket.
Yeah, so I don't understand baseball, so you need to tell me about that.
Same players.
Yeah.
Coach with a completely different mindset. And players who were average suddenly look...
World class,
collectively. Because there was a vision which everyone was on board with, and they stuck to, even when it wobbled.
Trust the process,
and it resulted in
a lost ashes. But
lost ashes. But
some very good stuff.
Yes.
Some very.
Is that a draw?
No.
Well, it was Australia retain it.
Yeah. It was 2-2.
I can't even remember the result. No, the last test.
It was 2-2.
The series was drawn. Yes, correct. Anyway, point being, you got Baseball, and also, do you remember when Great Britain had the revolution in cycling? The Sky cycling team came on, and they just completely...
Brailsford.
Yeah.
Now, what happened to him?
Anyway, let's not go there. It doesn't matter. But completely revolutionised and just came up with something totally...
A different way to cheat.
Innovative.
Let's be very clear. Cycling is all about cheating, right? Yeah. And he cheated better than anyone else. Yeah. You can hand that to him.
Let's go back. Let's focus on baseball.
Baseball.
Let's focus on baseball, because that's rugby cricket.
Hang on. If we got Dave Brailsford into the England camp, do you think we'd see an increase in performance?
I don't know. Is that who was coaching Reese Webb?
Reese Webb. Ask Reese Webb.
Yeah, Reese Webb. Do you want to know the speculation on this?
Go on.
I don't know if it's true or not. But the speculation is whatever he took was given to him by the WRU.
That was what was reported in France.
Is it?
Yeah.
Now, if that is true, that's dynamite. But, I mean, you walk around Cardiff and it's eminently believable.
You see, some of the jawlines of some of the individuals in who have been in and around the Wales teams over the years.
Well, Genji pointed out a difference in
Charlie Yules.
Charlie Yules. Yeah.
Look after,
after a trip to South Africa.
So just going back to that Baz ball, I reckon, I've never been more interested in England cricket for years. Not never been more interested. I haven't been as interested in English cricket in years.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat and watched the Ashes, hours of the Ashes.
Borthwick is like, it's like reverse Bazball.
Bauble is what it's being called, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Bazball, I think you'll like this principle, JB, because I'm sure you've spoken about this in football. Like, if a team scores two goals but then sits back and defends, why don't they just keep attacking?
Dangerously,
you don't want to. And like, Bazball, as I understand it, and I do follow, I'm going to the cricket on Friday, actually, in New Zealand, if the Manchester weather allows, because last time I tried, it got rained off. It's changing the dial. It's like breaking the perceived wisdom, particularly in test matches, which is, you've got to go at a slow run rate. You've got to defend, leave, defend, leave. And
play
then,
yourself in.
And then when it's right, when the time's right, you just got to play that one shot just at the right time. But it's kind of like how do you know that? How do you know that I'm going to leave the next two balls, then defend the next two, and then the time's right? It's like, no, the time's always right. Just go for it. And if that means you get out on three runs, that's what happens. Or if it means you score 180, as several, like many of the players have done playing it, then that's also right. It's just changing that risk profile. And Borthwick's is that, but it's changing it. It's like turning the dial totally the other way to say, we're just super, super low risk. And if we're super low risk, then the game will be super low risk, therefore we'll always be within a score, and then we can maybe turn it on in the last 20 minutes.
Somebody told me something the other day, and I believe them, actually. So, there was an analyst from a Celtic club, believe it or not, who's no longer there, he's gone elsewhere. And I heard that they discovered in the England camp that England have a physical line of where the ball has to be kicked from. So different teams have a different line on the field. So I guess the better the team, the further up the field this line is. Does that make sense?
Oh, so where you don't kick and where you run.
Yeah, exactly.
So like in the 20.
So the All Blacks, maybe you kick everything until you get to the opposition 10 metres.
Well, Aaron Smith in this game, and I think in the last South Africa game, kicked on the he put a box kick up when he was on the South African 22.
I mean, that's
that's high up.
Yeah, that's pretty high up. That's pretty high up. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. I'm just trying to think of other reasons Borthwick might be failing. The other reason might be this is just like the very, very ground level of his game plan. And until he gets his kick chase right and his box hits right,
he can't get onto the
line. I think there's an element.
I can believe that.
The reason I brought up the Baz ball and now what is being called bore ball, unfortunately, and I think you're right that it's just too.
The dials have just been switched. The
dials are
total opposite direction on risk.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the difference is if I was watching rugby Baz ball, I would tolerate losing to Fiji.
Yeah, if they put.
Yeah.
Who would be the Baz ball coach, though? I've got one name.
The Baz ball coach.
Ben Ryan.
Ryan, yeah.
No, Blackett. Lee Blackett.
Blackett?
Yeah.
Not a bad shout.
That'd be a great shout.
Yeah.
Is he with Wales now? Oh, no, Scarlets.
Don't know. He's not going to be the next England coach.
Well, I know that. Who is saying that they should fire Borthwick and get?
Scarlets.
Steve Diamond or Rob Baxter? That was in the press today.
Mark McCall.
Yeah. So anyway, you boys have got one hell of a 12 days wait until you play Argentina.
That game's already lost in my head. It's can we beat Samoa and Japan? Is the question?
I don't know. 12 days is a long time. we can do it.
You were going to go on to say some nice things about the Fijian team, JB.
Yeah, I was impressed with their set piece. Really impressed.
Their maul defence.
Maul defence was great.
England couldn't trouble them in
scrums were solid. Lineouts, they fluffed a couple.
Yeah.
But
outside of Johnny May's try, England couldn't bother them. No.
A bit towards the end.
That's the one I was going to mention.
Try.
A lot was made of, oh, well, will Fiji be fit enough to play against England in the final few minutes? No. Will England be fit enough to play against Fiji in the final few minutes?
Yeah.
So, I mean, where these boys play, let's just not forget. So, yeah, some of them are not absolute top-flight clubs, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are playing in France, and a lot of their conditioning is absolutely superb.
And a lot of them are playing Fiji Drua in Super Rugby, yeah, where the conditioning is also superb.
It will not be bad. It will not be bad. And the last thing I wanted to add to this, yes, historically, Fiji do well after a few weeks together. They've beaten France, they've beaten a few big teams at the end of a summer tour. So all this time together, you know, if they get into the knockouts, watch out, boys, because I think they could cause some real upsets.
They are... I've said this for a while, because from watching the Pacific Nations Cup, they were focusing on set piece. Like, they were focusing on scoring, driving more tries.
Mm.
Like, it's been a key part of the game. And the other side to it, in Caleb Munts, who did very, very well.
Where's he from?
Don't know, he might be Drura. But they've got an accomplished goal kicker. Yeah, Fiji Drura. He's only 23, but this game was three tries all, but Fiji kept the scoreboard ticking along.
Was it really three tries all?
Yeah.
Well, I never. It didn't feel like that.
So it was, Ford got two conversions, but only one penalty.
Yep.
Munts nailed his three conversions and scored three penalties. And that's the difference in the teams, like keeping the scoreboard ticking over. So they've got the set piece, they have got... not as experienced as someone like Leofano or Lima Sapuanga for Samoa, but someone who can kick sticks, is playing high level of rugby, and can keep the scoreboard ticking over.
And isn't it ironic that Fiji and Fiji Drua, led by a man in Mark Evans, who should really have, well, be in the English game, although I think it's even too late for him to rescue this. And Michael Arwen, just to circle back to start the podcast, or last podcast, I can't remember now, because it goes on for so long. He said in his piece, the game will be unrecognisable in 50 years. Incorrect, Michael. 3 years. I said 5 years originally. It's three years. We are on.
Put it on the whiteboard.
Doomsday countdown clock.
Final thing, because this is a mammoth couple of podcasts.
Yeah, right.
Final thing, I mentioned before, up in the kitchen, we're having our pre-pod chat, and earlier in the pod, that Charlie Morgan had done two good articles.
Yes.
The second one was a good article, but it had a clickbait headline.
He wouldn't have written that.
No, he would not have written the headbait. But the headline was like, these five weird tricks to get rid of back pain. It was, England can trouble Argentina in 12 days' time. They just need to fix these eight areas.
Only eight.
And, Charlie Morgan has basically pointed out the just the eight facets of England.
Let's try and guess the eight.
I've not got it with me, but right. I could tick them off for you.
It would be putting guards next to rucks.
One of the funniest things that I've ever seen anyone write.
Scoring tries.
Tick.
Tackling.
Yeah, one-on-one tackling.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen anyone write was one simple trick that France use on their kick chase. But the guy that wrote it was also coach of Obedians, and they were terrible. I was like, well, if it's that simple, why are Obedians at like literally the lowest level of rugby that they can possibly be at? It's one simple trick. But no. We'll just use a simple trick, boys. It'll be easy.
I'm looking at the draw and still thinking England, it's probably as likely as not that England go further than Ireland in the World Cup.
Yeah, it's probably a coin toss on that, yeah.
However, whatever happens at the end, and maybe the weird bit is, when I reflect on 4 years, England doing too well in this World Cup could paper over the cracks of what needs to
correct,
be.
Correct, Tim, correct.
So regardless... Regardless.
You win. Regardless, you win. You win in three ways, Tim, right? One, England win the World Cup, you win. Two, England don't win the World Cup, and there are a few reforms and you win. Or three, England do terrible in the World Cup and your YouTube subscribers go through the roof.
Yes.
Which one do you want, Tim?
Yes.
I want to win the World Cup.
I would hope that Borthwick is smart enough, astute enough, and good enough rugby brain to know that for some of these players, this is the last hurrah, this is the last shot. Some of the older ones, some of the younger ones as well. So he will do that rebuild. I just hope he gets the chance to do that rebuild.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he will. I think he's made too many mistakes. But
yeah, I also think he probably won't now.
Anyway, let's go to bed. But before we do, what's your YouTube schedule for this week, Tim?
I don't know. I'm going to be position player power rankings ahead of the World Cup.
Nice.
So position. Sort of distilling all of the rugby that I've watched and trying to come up with a top 10 position.
And next week we do our Brian Moore inspired team guide.
Yes.
And we should all do a little bit of prep work on one of the small
We don't need to. Brian didn't.
No, but yeah, well,
it's a Brian Moore inspired team prep. We've got to come with
little
information as we possibly can.
You never know what French team's going to turn up.
You don't.
And if you are kind of wondering what we're talking about, sign up to our Patreon.
Exactly.
There is
right. The only losers in that whole Brian Moore video, aside for everyone that watched it, was poor old Charles Richardson.
Charles Richardson.
Does not deserve
that. Go to the Patreon podcast to understand what we're talking about.
Charles is a good writer who really knows his... And he's quite funny. A couple of times he just hinted, like the Uruguayan scrum half, he just hinted, and Brian just had no idea.
Any names, Brian? No. Any reasons, Brian? No.
And do you want to give any reference to any game that's happened at any point in the last 20 years?
No.
Nope.
For God's sake. right, let the boys play.